Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio. We are here at our new studio digs, sort of, out in Lakewood.
In process tonight.
I'm Travis, and I'm joined by both Rachel and Dana Hutchison tonight.
Hello.
Hello.
So, a treat. You got your three-person panel to talk about all kinds of stuff. It is Friday the 20th, but it'll be Saturday the 21st when you hear this.
Yes.
Or Sunday the 22nd.
Uh-huh.
Or Monday the 23rd if you listen on the podcast. Or, uh-huh. You get the idea. So we got a lot to talk about. Things are happening in Oklahoma fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where we'll start.
So remember a couple weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, I was yelling and screaming about this abortion bill that was going before the Oklahoma House and Senate, which would make a felony, a felony basically to doctors who provide abortions.
So, if the doctors and the women who got the...
No, it's specifically to doctors. It doesn't criminalize women. It criminalizes doctors. It's mm-hmm. a not very clever way.
And I didn't read the legislation, but is it that blunt and broad?
Yes.
It is.
So, Dana, go ahead.
So, specifically, the way that it's written, it would become a felony, which is punishable by 3 to 6 years in prison for anyone who provides an abortion. Specifically, it would also ban anyone from getting their medical license if they have provided an abortion in the past.
Or, like, and been in service of one, right? So it also affects nurses? Well, is that right or no?
That's part of the problem.
Okay.
Of why... Well, we'll get there. But
okay.
No, that was ambiguous.
Okay.
And there were no exceptions for life of the mother, rape, incest.
There was an exception for preservation of the life of the mother.
Uh-huh.
But, again, also very ambiguous. It didn't talk about any particular instances, but rape and incest were specifically not brought up.
God.
Wow.
So
this was, but when we talked about it, I think it was just before the House, and they passed it, and then the Senate passed it, and sent it to the governor's
desk. Let's be clear, Oklahoma
desk.
State Senate.
Yes, specifically mm-hmm. the Oklahoma State Senate, or House, and then sent it to the Oklahoma State Senate, and the Senate passed it, and then sent it to Governor Fallon's desk. And today, the big news was that she vetoed it.
Specifically, she vetoed it because of the same questions that you guys raised there. She felt it was too vague and was unable to be found constitutional if it, you know, were to become challenged
legally. Yeah, she basically said
it's
too vague and it probably wouldn't stand up to a court. But she also said, you know, right values. Like, I agree with this as a principled issue. I just don't think that this particular law is specific enough or that it would be able to stand up to a constitutional challenge in the court system.
It would have been an embarrassment for... I mean, it's an embarrassment already for Oklahoma that it passed through their two chambers.
But she's a conservative Republican
very
woman.
Very conservative.
And
yeah,
it's the most conservative state in the country. And I, frankly, was really surprised that it was vetoed. I was very surprised.
I actually wasn't surprised. I thought that
it
was...
Yeah, I'm with Dana. I mean, is it meta right now that on the TV we're watching a movie where Oklahoma is being ripped apart by giant tornadoes?
Twister just happens to be on in the
Twister
background.
Just happens to be
that
on.
That takes place in Oklahoma, right?
It does. Yeah. Well, yeah, of course.
No,
Hurricane Alley.
No, I think she recognizes that politically this would be an embarrassment and a nightmare and undefendable, and uh-huh. I'm sure that she met with...
A few of her legal counsel experts,
mm-hmm. they said this is a non-starter.
Do you want to be North Carolina right now, right?
The way that she talked about it, the way when she vetoed it, was with very legalese kind of statement saying that, you know, the most direct path to reexamination of the United States Supreme Court's ruling in Roe v. Wade is the appointment of a conservative pro-life justice to the United States Supreme Court. So saying the only real way that we can go about this
is to elect Trump.
Yeah.
So go for it, all you Bernie or Busters. That's what you want, I guess.
Good.
I mean, she definitely was advised by somebody to say, listen, like, this is indefensible. There's no way that the state's attorney general can go up against
it's
anyone.
100% going to get struck down.
Like,
it'll get struck down with harsh, insulting, like, uh-huh. what in the world were you possibly thinking that this would be constitutional?
Absolutely.
What I think, though, that we should remember is that's all well and good, and we can all say that, but what's important is that the women in Oklahoma, while there are only 2 abortion clinics in the entire state, at least those women still have access to those 2 clinics. And had this been passed and become law and not had an injunction against it, all of the women in Oklahoma would have been you know, risk of not having access to abortion services in their state. So I applaud Governor Fallon for vetoing this. I mean, yes, it could have been overturned. Yes, it most certainly would have been overturned. But in the meantime, the women of Oklahoma would have been very adversely affected.
Well, I think we can very clearly say she did the right thing for all the wrong reasons.
Yes. To her own admission. Like, I would love to outlaw abortion, she says, you know?
Sort of off topic, did this come up last night at all? Because we went to a Planned Parenthood fundraiser last night.
Yeah.
And I think somebody did mention it.
Yeah, they did mention it. I talked to like two people about it. And then when they did their little speeches, about it at the end of the night, they definitely talked about the Oklahoma bill. It hadn't passed the Senate at that point, so it was still a House bill. But they... Last night it already had.
The context in which it was brought up by the speakers was that we in Colorado had a proposed bill that was almost word for word exactly the same thing. And it was very, very handily defeated in Colorado, but that it is a bill that was proposed a lot of places. This is the first time that anyone has ever proposed that this be a felony charge rather than just a straight out ban.
Right.
That's never happened anywhere before, but the language for it has been passed around from state to state, and Oklahoma was supposed to be the trial area. And luckily it was defeated right out of the gate, or else we'd be seeing these.
I mean, it was not defeated. It was vetoed. So the state legislatures, I would think, if I was a state legislator who was pro this kind of nonsense, I would try to pass it in my state and see if my governor had the same reaction.
Oh, I think we straight up call this a defeat. I mean, what... Fallon has said is essentially like under a challenge, there's absolutely no way that this would hold up. And the second thing was, with the doctors that she's spoken to and the people who'd come forward as from the medical profession who had anything to say about this, they said it's so ambiguous and vague that we have absolutely no idea what the phrase protect the life of the mother could possibly mean.
Right. Are we protecting her from suicide if she's forced to give birth to a child she doesn't want through rape or incest or just doesn't want a child? Or
that's probably you and I's interpretation, but protect the life meaning quality of life or just sanctity of life? Or like, does she just need to persist in the world, or can she be in a vegetative state? What does that mean, protect the life? Well, and they specifically, the way that it was written was preserve the life of the mother.
Preserve the life.
Which means that life needs to be exactly the same. So does that mean that if, say, we need to perform an abortion, but it turns out that she needs to have a hysterectomy afterwards, did we preserve the life of the mother? Her life is now different.
I don't even want to think about where they might go with that.
Right. So doctors were all over the place saying, like, this is so ambiguous, there's no way we could actually
Doctors coming forward and saying this bill is terrible and awful doesn't stop governors necessarily from signing awful bills into law.
No, that's absolutely true. But doctors coming forward and saying, how in the hell could you possibly even write an enforceable version of this
because
that goes into law.
Because the people getting elected to these state houses are crazy, ignorant, scary, and it is the result of us liberals not being involved in the process on the local and state levels.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely true. But when you start talking to a seasoned governor about something that could become law, which is what their part of the law is supposed to be, is the...
Enforcement?
Executive enforcement arm. If you say this is unenforceable, I think that gets their ears.
Because
it's the job of
their cabinet and of the executive branch of state government, just as it is in federal government, to enforce these laws. And what that means is not necessarily law enforcement, although that's part of it, but also enforcement meaning, you know, legislatures pass laws that are often vague and often broad sweeping, and it's the job of the executive branch to put specific rules into place that allow that law to be enforced. And when people complain about bureaucracy and they complain about all the rules and all the, you know, the red tape, what they're complaining about is the idea that we have a government made up of three parts that are separate and equal, and when the legislature passes laws, they often don't write into those laws on both state and federal levels what that means or how to enforce it or who's going to enforce it or a lot of different things. So in this case, I think it's good that she listened to the doctors and listened to people that came to her aid and said, like, this is not enforceable. Right. But this is something that happens all the time.
Right. And, you know, she's been a governor since 2010. She's not one of the 2014...
Not a 2014 but she's in the Tea Party wave.
Yeah, she was in the Tea Party wave, but she's been around long enough to know that some of these things that come across your desk actually become bureaucratic nightmares if they're not, you know, properly adjudicated or thought
about. Yeah, like on that topic, I have to think that somebody came to Pat McCrory, maybe from the Chamber of Commerce, and said, this is a really bad idea for you to sign this bill, and he did anyway.
Yeah, and I think that probably Governor Fallon thought, I don't want to be the next North Carolina. Like, I don't want the national news and the press and you know, our local businesses. And I don't want the pressure that North Carolina has gotten from the bathroom
bill.
Well,
this is a different animal.
It is, but I think that it would have gotten, I mean, even just press. That it passed the Senate and that it was going to her desk got national news. And I think she thought, like, this is not a fight I want to have in the national press. Like, if this is unprecedented, I'm not going to be the first. It's definitely not enforceable. It's definitely going to get overturned anyway. So I think that there were some political reasons behind her vetoing it other than just, like, you know, her statements.
Well, and if you look at the smackdown that came from Loretta Lynch this week for North Carolina, so like, good. Do you want to be the next governor on that list? That was, like,
oh my God. That was amazing.
That was insanely professional level
shade.
We
have to keep things in perspective, though. To us, it's a wow moment. To these people in the South, they eat that up. I mean, they're you know, oh, that this... You know, that actually helps McCrory in some ways with his constituents. Say, look, oh, the federal government is trying to, you know, is hand down their heavy hand.
The black lady bureaucrat is coming to tell us what to do with our daughters and bathrooms.
Right.
Now, I think that that's absolutely true with the constituents, but with what actually comes down from the Attorney General's office, that is...
Oh, it's huge.
Huge. And
it's huge.
We can absolutely say, you know, basically with impunity, that from the White House's side, we can call this a federal issue, not a state issue, and we will take you to the Department of Justice if you do something like this. Well,
we're sort of switching topics.
I'm just saying, I think that if someone were to decide that the Department of Justice should be involved in something like what's happening in Oklahoma, that there's a certain reason to be apprehensive if you're the governor there, because you're going to be...
The next target.
The next target. And when we know that this administration has absolutely zero problem pulling the trigger on calling you out publicly and saying, executive order, you're not going to do that.
You're
and then in the meantime, the Department of Justice is going to investigate
order.
You.
It was just a
guidance.
Guidance. It was a memo, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it was if you do this, the Department of Justice will come after you.
Potentially,
you will lose, like, funding for your schools because you can't let people in schools not be able to use the bathroom just like their cisgendered peers.
Yeah, and what's important is that the American public is on the right side of this. It's something like 70 or 80% are not in support of these bills. They think they're ridiculous.
Yes.
Well, the numbers are climbing, too, as people are realizing that most of the rhetoric around this was been completely and utterly fabricated.
Yeah, and then it's a vast majority of Democrats and Republicans. It's like a 50-50 split. So it's a wedge issue for them.
Right.
But it's but that's the hill they're going to die on, apparently, in terms of this, because they've given up on the fighting gay marriage pretty much, except for, like, Roy Moore in Alabama and a couple other places. But pretty much they've given that fight up very quickly.
Yeah.
And now this is sort of their last anti-LGBT stand.
Yeah, I would actually argue against the phrase it's the hill they're going to die on and say it's the valley they're going to die on, because I think that they know that this is one of the last times that Republicans will hold a majority in a vast number of states. And federal,
I'd say, I don't know that we're going to be able to turn over and change state houses and governments all that radically in this upcoming election.
I think the fear is there on their side, and they're trying to ram through as many radical things as they possibly can. Just in case they lose it, they're going to try to change as many things as they can, and hopefully...
They're worried about Donald Trump down ballot, but they also know that the gerrymandering won't end until 2020, so it's sort of like a mixed bag. But I think that you're right, Dana, in that... They are looking at 2016 and saying, oh, this down ballot could really hurt us, and we better just ram through every ridiculous nonsense thing we need to do.
While we still have majorities, let's get them in.
Yeah, and then
I think they would more or less do that anyway, but you could have a point.
While we're on the topic, by the way, of bathroom bills, which we've been talking about ad nauseum for weeks because it's been in the news for weeks, I want to read a little bit from a I'm going to call it a love letter because that was what the title of this listener email that we got was. This was from Rebecca Romans, and she just wrote us this really delightful email about our podcast, and we super appreciate it. And one of the things that she wanted to point out was that the North Carolina law, and I'm just going to quote her for a second, quote, regarding last week's show, it hasn't been mentioned enough, in my opinion, that the vile North Carolina law that includes the transgender bathroom ordinance had a lot of other important content. It also bars any city in North Carolina from enacting any laws raising the minimum wage or environmental ordinances that vary from the state laws.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the bathroom bill was intended as a smokescreen to draw attention away from the rest of the provisions in the bill. And it has succeeded spectacularly. I feel such sympathy for the trans people in North Carolina who were already marginalized and discriminated against, who are now under a giant spotlight. So I just wanted to say that I completely agree. And I think that that's something that we're going to do some more research into. And we're going to talk about the details of that law. And
We have mentioned it broadly a few more times that that bill does way more than, you know, create
discriminate against trans people in bathrooms.
Yeah. Right. And it is very in the media and easy to talk about the way that people have been yelling and screaming and writing when fake pieces about it.
When they first rammed the bill through, especially liberal media places like MSNBC and liberals on Twitter, were very much all over all the horrible points of the bill.
Right.
And said it's ridiculous. But since that has been the topic du jour that everybody's talking about, we have become very myopic in terms of the trans bathroom aspect of that bill, which, as Rebecca rightly points out, is just one tiny piece of an awful, terrible, horrible nightmare bill.
Yeah.
Well, and it's hard not to nitpick with people because when you hear people argue about this, and lots of people have been arguing both sides in all forms of media, it's hard not to notice when somebody makes a salient point and when somebody makes a completely asinine point,
right,
and not want to bring it up because it's something that, in my mind, is so obviously incorrect. And I think for a lot of people, that's true. And for the people on the other side, they think that we are so obviously pandering to a group of child molesters or could care less about crime that it's insane that they would think that that's the angle from it that we're coming from.
Uh-huh.
But it's hard not to try to defend oneself against those types of arguments. So I think that it really narrows the discussion.
And the other thing that we were talking about, which Dana and I are going to get into further on a separate podcast, but one of the things Rebecca brought up was intersex people. And so intersex people are not trans. These are people who are born biologically with a gender that does not meet what we sort of think of as the standard, like, male or female XY, XX chromosome structure. And how conveniently it is that Republicans, when they, or conservatives, I should say, when they talk about, you know, you were born a man, you were born a woman, God made two genders, that's actually not true, scientifically or biologically, that there are not just two genders.
You're going to bother conservatives with science?
Erasure is something that's really been happening in these conversations that no one is talking about, which is that no one's challenging them on this idea that there are only two genders biologically, medically, scientifically. There's only two genders. That's actually not true. And that's something that they bring up all the time. Like, look, scientifically and biologically, there's two genders. And it's like, well, no, that's actually not true. And no one's really talking about that. So I wanted to bring it up and say, that's not true. And
I mean, what's quaint about it is that they're trying to play both sides. They'll say, scientifically and biologically, God made you one of two genders, which is playing both cards, the science and the Bible card. And
one is convenient.
To somebody who maybe doesn't necessarily know, either one of those two things will probably play to something that you agree with.
Right.
Uh-huh. And I think that that is a very, very Republican, Frank Luntz, carefully constructed statement to say, we're pulling science, we're pulling God, or we're playing science, playing God.
The fact that they're even using science to me is insulting.
But the fact of the matter is, it's just...
Well, they're calling it science. They're using pseudoscience and calling
it wrong.
Yeah, and it's actually, it's not even pseudoscience. I mean, it's just choosing your own facts.
Right.
Yep. At that point, it's not like there's some study that says, like, no, there are no XXY people in the world. That's right. It's just ignoring an entire...
They could fund a fake one that says that.
you know.
Well, it would be untrue, though. Not
but
even.
It would be untrue.
Well, sure, but no, that, that doesn't stop them from using it.
They could fund a study that said that there are no volcanoes in the world, too, but...
Yeah. Well, that don't give them any ideas, Dana. They're funding, you know, climate denial studies all the time.
So anyway, I just wanted to say that, like, something to remember is and so when I was listening to Pat McCrory talk to, I think it was Ari Shapiro on NPR last week, which we talked about, mm-hmm. Ari Shapiro brought up intersex people, and he just said, like, oh, well, I don't really know about that.
I'm sure you
do. It's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of people, and it's not really a thing that we need to worry about, and that's not what we're talking about. And but it was in direct response to him saying, like, there are only two genders. Mm-hmm. And Ari Shapiro was like, well, it's 1 in 1,000 babies. And he's just like, anyway, it's not what we're talking about. God made it this way, and
stick
culture has
points.
Made it this way, and historically we've always done it
Who's
this
culture?
Way.
Whose culture? Whose culture?
And well, historically and we've always done it this way. Like, historically we've done a lot of horrible things.
Yeah.
That's not an excuse. That's not a thing that you... Oh, historically we had slaves. Why don't we have them now? Historically, women couldn't do anything. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up, and yeah.
So there was another thing that was brought up very specifically that I wanted to talk about that was addressed in the love letter.
Oh, yeah.
That was the author, if you can pull it back up so we
yeah,
can get
Rebecca
the exact
Romans.
Quote. But she had mentioned that she had had a relationship with somebody who was trans.
Yes. And well, no, I'm sorry. So what specifically she said was that her one of her ex-husbands was an intersex person. He was raised as a female. But transitioned to a male before they met. So this is not trans in the sense that that her ex-husband was born biologically female. Her husband
sure.
was raised as female, which
sure.
is very common for certain types of intersex people,
absolutely.
Depending on what your anatomy looks like. Back in the day, a lot of doctors would...
it's very common for them to type
surgery
you.
Surgery and then type you, and then your parents don't tell you, and then you... grow up feeling like a different gender because, in fact, you have those hormones and you have those chromosomes. Anyway.
Also, a lot of those surgeries are superficial surgeries,
yes.
not really dealing with the endocrine system. So
correct.
As you grow
they
up.
They are no, entirely.
Yeah.
Entirely superficial.
Yeah.
To make the person appear to be the gender that the doctor has assigned to them, even though that gender is obviously often ambiguous and or both and or a lot of things. Anyway, she goes on to say... believe me, he would have looked very out of place in any women's restroom.
Yes, that's what I wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
And I think it's been brought up here before, but I mean, if you take somebody who has transitioned, they're going to feel more comfortable for everyone.
Yes.
In the bathroom of the
I know
choice.
Trans
well,
men
I mean,
and
I
women in my life.
This
and
is where
I,
the
it
logic
would be very
apart,
strange
right?
for me to have the trans women in my life go into a men's bathroom, as strange as it would be for me to do so. And
yes.
for the trans men in my life to come into the women's bathroom would feel as strange as the cisgendered
well,
men in my life coming
yeah,
into it. Like,
yeah,
it's absolutely true.
And we've done what we just complained about doing, which is get myopic on this bill and just talk about the trans bathroom thing.
Yeah.
But with that said, this is where their argument falls apart. When you're talking about actual trans people using restrooms, then the logic is completely ass backwards.
Yes. Yes.
But what they're saying is that there's this rash, or there will be this rash, of would-be child molesters who use the law as a license to dress up and then harass or stalk
assault.
Women and children in bathrooms, mm-hmm. which for the 8 millionth time... without this law is as completely illegal as with the law.
Right.
So
and also has never happened. And also two things have happened in the last 2 weeks. One is that a cisgendered man who wasn't dressed as anything or pretending to be or using this law or anything else went into a bathroom and assaulted a child, not because it was okay to do so in a Target, but because he was a predator and
right.
preyed on a small child
right.
dressed as a man in a women's bath.
Well, and
this
if you-
law is not protecting women from predators anywhere. It doesn't protect me walking down the street. It doesn't protect my niece in a bathroom. It doesn't protect me or any woman anywhere. All it does is to
law-
specifically target trans people, make their lives more difficult, and make them more targets of violence. And it doesn't do anything as a woman to protect me from people who would like to prey on me.
Now, yeah. If there was a specific law in the books that said that what he did was specifically banned versus it just is. Going into a bathroom and assaulting a child is specifically banned, but assaulting a child is already illegal. What does that change?
It doesn't change anything.
What it changes is that now, from a legal standpoint, you can tack on a misdemeanor trespassing charge.
If they write it right.
Stalking and assault.
I mean, we'll see.
And the other it's ridiculous, but the other really interesting thing that's happened is a lot of cisgendered women who not present as traditionally female are getting harassed in women's bathrooms. So women who have short hair, women who aren't wearing dresses and makeup apparently, women who do not present themselves as like, you know, your sorority sister or, you know, whatever.
Super feminized.
Right? Super feminine women. So women who do not present themselves that way, which I know many of, and like, they're all sort of becoming endangered now, because what's happening is these women who have like short hair and wear a t-shirt and go pee, other women and men are harassing them in women's bathrooms saying, oh, you're one of those people. You're one of those freaks.
Yeah.
You're one of those trans people. And they're being thrown out of the bathroom they made this law. They said you're required to use the bathroom that matches your gender at birth. And then the reaction has been, okay, I'm doing that like I've always done for these women who are cisgendered and using bathrooms. And now they're being harassed and they're being thrown out of bathrooms. So it's maddening, right? Like, it's completely maddening.
There was
maddening.
A story on KGRO the other day. It was a woman in Connecticut who had short hair, and I think she was wearing a ball cap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this lady, and it was in a Walmart or something, and this lady said, you're one of those people, you're disgusting. And
Get
so
out.
She went on a rant. She went on a rant at Facebook and said, well, actually, my hair's short because I donated to children with cancer.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah.
Is
Lots
the worst
of love.
Possible
yeah.
thing that this fucking lady took her... I, for whatever reason, decided this lady must be trans because she had short hair, which is asinine.
Well, that's not the worst thing. That's the best possible outcome, right? Because this person is a cisgendered white lady who got harassed, and that's terrible. She wasn't, as it turns out, a trans man who would potentially have faced criminal charges and or violence for having been in the bathroom. So... But it's, yeah, I mean, it's
absolutely... Well, not in Connecticut, but...
It's absolutely right. causing way more problems than it's
fixing. Of course,
fixing.
Of
I mean,
course.
It
was never a problem.
It's not
a
problem.
It's not a problem. And I think you guys already touched on...
It's a solution without a problem.
...stories of the people who are cisgendered women going to their cisgendered women's bathroom. And they're basically getting genital checked by other women in the bathroom to make sure that...
Yes.
Yeah.
Or what
the woman in Target who was like, some woman came and peered into the stall
to make sure
and
I
was
wasn't
like,
trans.
Oh, I was just making sure that you were a real woman.
That you weren't
like,
some...
oh my God.
Or wait till we get to, you know, a Greensboro bar and maybe an effeminate guy at a bar walks in and pees and a couple drunk asshole frat boys think... something, and I mean that's coming.
Yeah,
you know, it's inevitable.
Oh, it's just creating a culture of violence is okay in bathrooms for people that aren't like you, because we have created this fear. We've basically legitimized violence by saying there's something to be scared of, there's something to be on guard about, there's something to be feared. So whatever behavior that you exhibit that would normally be unacceptable, we've completely legitimized because we've given you something, some sort of excuse.
Well,
and it
blows me away.
Badly.
It blows me away. I really have to triple down on my statements that, like, I don't understand why bathrooms have become a thing in all this. I mean,
well,
especially because the fear-mongering is all about women's bathrooms, and they're all stalled bathrooms.
Because they're public places and children use them. So
yeah, but
it's
what about
bathrooms?
Park benches? What about carousels?
No,
what about
hold on. Beyond that, what about men's bathroom where little boys go? No one seems concerned about the men that are predators against young boys going into men's rooms where everyone's supposed to be in that place.
Well,
no one's concerned about little
because,
boys.
No, they were.
Because it's not an issue.
No,
bathrooms
they
are not the fucking problem.
They were an issue for about 25 years when everyone was screaming about how we can't have gay people out in public because they're going to... try to convert our little boys by
conflating homosexuality with pedophilia.
But never did people say young boys should not go into bathrooms because it's possible that men.
Oh yes, they did. Yes, absolutely they did. You do not go unaccompanied into a public restroom at a rest stop or anything like that. Absolutely.
Yeah, my parents impressed that upon me, too.
Yeah, I mean, that absolutely was a thing until it was shown that never fucking happens and people stopped freaking out about it.
It's not that it never happens. That's not true.
Well,
it's just that it's not gay people or trans people that are committing these crimes.
It's not a correlation between any sort of sexual predilection or behavior.
No, of course not.
It has nothing to do with it. Well, is predilection a bad word?
I mean, it means something different, but I don't know what you meant.
I mean predilection meaning anything across the board, meaning orientation and or gender identity.
No, that's not the right word. Predilection is more like...
Well, I wanted to include like pansexuality. I was trying to be inclusive.
No, predilection is more like the thing I prefer. Like the thing I...
All right. I was trying to be inclusive.
Right, no. All so right. like some... Yeah, anyway, go ahead.
All right. But no, it's just... It's been shown that there's no correlation between any of that and anyone being abused, so that that argument kind of disappeared, and it's just resurfaced out of nowhere, using that same gay panic language that was used 25 years ago to make the exact same argument. They just resurrected it, basically word for word, and just like they just did a control F, replace all from gay to trans, and they're just resurrecting the exact same argument.
Although, can I say that as a young girl... bathrooms weren't really a thing for me. Nobody really... My mom would maybe come in with me. My little brother would come in with us, because men are scary. But I don't think that I ever had an issue with going to the bathroom by myself when I was a kid. Probably from the time I was like 6 or 7 until, you know.
Well, then, I mean...
But I think that it was an issue, not just necessarily because of the gay panic thing, but because, you know...
Just
men.
Men. Yeah. No, I mean, I used the women's restroom.
Cis men. Yeah. Let's be specific.
And no, the entire time I was in high school, I used the women's restroom because I grew up as kind of an effeminate goth kid.
Uh-huh.
And I was afraid of getting my ass kicked.
Absolutely.
And I was welcomed into the women's restroom as a cis man because women were like, men are going to kick your ass if they find you in a urinal.
Yeah.
So pretty much there was an entire agreement within the social structure at my high school that like no, this guy uses the women's restroom because he could get his ass kicked over there,
and nobody was scared
was scared of me.
You weren't leering at them while they were peeing behind the stalls being like, oh my god,
I just
needed to pee and I didn't want to do it.
That's another thing that's happening
dudes.
Too some women are reporting that, you know, they're sitting down in the stall and other women are
that's what we were just talking about.
That's insane.
That's what we were just talking about, is like being leered at by other women that
having
are
making
sure,
check.
You're not,
make sure you're not
like, no, please just let me pee no matter who you are.
You're the one being the creepy, weird stalker now.
Just
don't you?
Exactly. No, the irony of it all.
And what if I was a man that was, or a trans woman who was quietly sitting down to pee and doing my business, and now you are creating a situation?
Yes.
No, the irony of it's the irony of it is insane. The only reason I bring up the idea that I, you know, in high school peed in the women's room or used the women's restroom is to say that. I've been in a lot of them, and I will tell you, anyone who's going to be creeping around there, or any of you Republicans who think that a lot of salacious shit is happening behind closed doors that you're not privy to, let me tell you, it's exactly the same shit, literally, that happens in the men's room.
It's a bathroom.
It's a bathroom. There's nothing special happening
there. It's a bathroom.
There.
People go in, they piss or they shit or both, and then they wash their hands, hopefully. And then they leave.
Well, if you're a Republican congressman, there is a chance there's more happening.
That's well, true. That's true. I mean,
foot under the door. What is his name? The Arlen.
Craig.
What, no, Craig. Craig.
Larry Craig.
Larry Craig.
And there was a couple.
Yeah, but
more
that happened
too.
In a men's room. Why are we not legislating full wall doors so that there's no
keeping Republican legislators out of
keeping Republican
bathrooms?
Yeah, out of public
it's
bathrooms.
It's significantly more dangerous and illegal.
Yeah.
And they need to maybe they should be the ones using the unisex
infinitely
bathrooms.
More because there's literally been zero reports of a trans person
doing anything
other
really.
Than what they're supposed to do in a bathroom.
Well, this brings up another point on this that I think has been made by many people but is worth bringing up here. Do you remember Mike Huckabee with his discussion about if he was allowed to in high school chose to be a woman that day and take showers in the women's locker room, he would have certainly made that choice.
Right.
Maybe the Republicans who are making these bills aren't imagining that there's some creeper out there.
It'd be
Maybe they are the creepers that are out there.
You're thinking, oh my God, we can't let people like me do these things.
No, if you were to give me this freedom, do you imagine how much I'd abuse it?
Well, yeah. It's the same argument that I've always made about people that have this religious fervor. Is like, how do you know not to murder if God tells you not to? And I always think like, oh my God, is the only thing stopping you from murdering someone that you're afraid of going to hell? Because that is a whole other thing. I don't want to murder anybody. I don't need a scary God or a scary place to go if I do it. I just don't have the fucking, I don't have it. I don't have like this burning need to do it and this imaginary thing is stopping me. So it's exactly. The same, like, it's the same sort of logic, like, oh, so you're the thing that we're protecting us from.
No, but it works too because Christians never murder. Right.
Never in the history.
Or rape or steal.
No.
Well, it really begs the question, why did they need that rule?
Yeah.
Why did they need that rule?
Why did they have to make that rule?
Why did they have to make a commandment that said, thou shalt not kill if they're so good?
Well, right. Well, we have to go back to the Old Testament, and you needed some kind of rule book.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. On that note, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about all the other news of the day.
Yeah, I wanted to bring talk about the Nevada stuff a little bit and relate it to Dana's experience at the Colorado State Assembly and
Absolutely.
Talk about some parallels and some other things like that. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back. To Irreverent Testimony, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types, although seems we have a lot of boomer fans out there.
We love
cool.
you all too.
We love you all. Our octogenarians are what's younger than a millennial?
Oh, like I don't even know.
Tween?
Tadpole?
Do we have any tweens that are listening?
I don't even know. Are they like moved on from podcast to Vines or something? I don't know. Anyway, if you're out there and you're listening, we appreciate it. So, what are we doing next?
So I think you had teased we talk about Nevada.
Yeah, so this past weekend there was the Nevada State Assembly, right? Or the convention.
Yep.
And Bernie. some Bernie folks really didn't quite understand what the rules were or tried to get all the rules thrown out. Did get a lot of the rules thrown out, which is to their disadvantage, and generally raised a ruckus. And I'm not going to get into all the details of it, but it caught my attention that we did a show with Dana a while back where he went to the Colorado, the same thing basically.
The state convention.
Which happened way earlier. And similar situation, except the Colorado Bernie people didn't lose their mind and start like throwing chairs.
I want to get into a little bit of the details if you guys don't know, which is that it got a little bit violent, not in terms of like anyone was personally injured, but there were throwing of chairs. There was
allegedly.
I think it's been reported by enough people that we can.
Yeah.
Okay. There may have been some chairs thrown.
And some really nasty things to the convention chair, who happened to be a woman.
She definitely got death threats.
Yeah. She got death threats. She got.
This might be
doxed.
Really petty, but I think it's worth bringing up that you know there were Bernie Bros there that were holding up signs and big sheets of paper. Over yes. the, I don't know if we'd call them magnetrons, but they were,
the screens,
you know, the screens that,
were
that
showing...
show the larger picture to the back of the audience of what's going on. They were holding up pictures over it so that
you couldn't see what she was saying. People were saying. They were just generally acting like assholes.
Being very disruptive.
And the reason for that was that they felt that they were being in some way very much like Trump has said, that they were being disenfranchised, or that the, you know, that the delegate count wasn't going in their favor and therefore it must be corrupt.
And they've been somehow maligned.
They've been somehow maligned. And the reality of that, as we've talked about on this podcast before, is that this is a party primary. This is a party selection. This is not a general election. And so the parties get to make the rules, and these rules have been established prior to the convention.
Well, that's a point of contention. I will elaborate upon that.
Sure. But that this is not being disenfranchised. This is about the party is trying to elect their candidate to be the presidential nominee of their party. And so they make rules, and sometimes those rules don't necessarily go for the guy who's been an independent for 30 years. And I'm sorry if that pisses you off, but that is not a reason for you to act like third graders. It's upsetting.
A big part of what I think everyone needs to understand is that each state party is not the DNC.
Right.
There is the DNC, and each state has their own chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And so each of those rules get made, and each of those rules get made at that convention. So there's a rules committee that gets together, and they come up with what the rules are going to be. We ran across this, which I talked about for Colorado. We had a group of people who I was a part of, where we sat down and we made all the rules together of how the delegates will be chosen.
Yeah.
And then we had a couple of upstarts that kept talking about, here's what we're going to put in the minority report. And we tried to talk them out of it. And then when we got to the convention, they had actually expanded their minority report to include many of other things. What a minority report is to say, like, we were also on the group. It's like a dissenting opinion.
Sure. Okay.
So they say, like, here are the things that we feel like were overlooked or weren't considered in our favor. And so we'd like the rest of the group to talk about it. Because in this group of 15 people, or in our case it was like 24 people, we couldn't come to a consensus, which is not true. We did come to a consensus, but there was a group of people who felt like their opinion wasn't being represented. So they wrote a minority report.
Sure.
And presented it to the group. And almost everything they presented in a way that had enough fervor, no reason, but fervor.
Right.
That the group of people who was asked to vote on it all voted for yes for everything in the minority report. Even though the group of people who spent hours and hours and hours talking it over decided that, you know, with the minutia, that we would go against it. Or not vote for it.
Well, but I want to talk about some of the parallel issues that I heard from Nevada, though. You had a lot of folks who either didn't have the right qualifications to be delegates or just didn't show up, which caused a problem. That was also an issue, although there were lots of alternates showed up in Colorado.
So in Colorado, it didn't turn out to be a numbers issue because the Colorado Dems were on the ball and made sure that they had three times as many people as they needed signed up to either be a delegate or alternate.
So you're talking about the Colorado Bernie delegates?
In Nevada, yes. In Colorado, we were fine.
Yeah.
Every spot was filled.
But in Nevada, not necessarily?
In Nevada, not necessarily.
Okay.
And that was part of the problem.
Is people didn't show up who said they would show up.
And then you're throwing chairs.
And then they're throwing chairs saying we didn't get the delegates that we were promised.
Well, part of the issue was some of those people that didn't show up would not have been able to gain entrance because of some either paperwork or they weren't actually eligible to be delegates.
Exactly. So they were elected delegates based on a preliminary thing. And I only can speak from the Colorado side, but we have a credentials office. I would assume that all of them do. And what they do is when you are chosen to be a delegate, you immediately go back to the credentials room and they make absolutely sure that you're allowed to be a delegate.
Well, even more than that, I think even to be on the list to caucus, you would have had to have been properly registered.
Now, that depends on the state rules. I don't know if Nevada had...
Yeah, I don't know about Nevada is what I'm saying, but I know in Colorado...
In Colorado, you had to have already... Yeah, to even caucus, you had to have already been on a list.
Nevada, I guess a lot of people preliminarily, or maybe they had same-day registration, or which wouldn't make sense.
From what I understand, is that they had online same-day registration.
Well, see, now this is the fault of the caucus captains, then, because they're supposed to know this stuff.
Right.
And not that's, sign up delegates who are not going to be able to get to the floor of the convention. And,
right. And or the, when they get there, are not going to be qualified to actually be delegates. And again, the caucus system is flawed in this way that it's not run by people who are professionals at doing an election. Yeah, no, they're not even really trained. People.
Right.
Well, it's arcane. So,
well, and I'm not a Nevada expert, and I've heard so many conflicting reports about what spawned a lot of the chaos.
Yeah.
And only one report talked about the online same-day registration. Yeah. So I'm not going to go on. I'm not going to go on record as saying that, but I did hear one report that did say that. And that if that were true, I could see how that could spark a lot of chaos. So, because if you're standing in line and your name's supposed to be on a list and you're standing outside on your smartphone, you know, 45 minutes beforehand signing up to be a Democrat and register to come to the caucus.
And then it turns out you had to have been it a turns Democrat out you had for to have 6 months done it.
Yeah,
or
yeah, or you had to have lived in that particular county.
Right,
like,
right.
Well, but because so, the way we're it's talking about up, the actual convention, though. These are people that have already caucused, and they've been selected as delegates, and they go to the convention, and they're making the rules. And from what I understand from NPR, the big hubbub was about whether or not certain numbers of delegates were going to get pushed a certain way, and that these people just didn't understand the rules that were set.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure,
that in the end, Hillary won, and she got more delegates than Bernie, and she got more delegates than were originally supposed to go to her because a number of Bernie delegates didn't show up at the convention to vote for Bernie, and so they got really mad and said, well, that shouldn't matter.
Well, that's
and there
the part
were
where
super
they're
delegates that
foul.
Came in and said, oh, well, you shouldn't vote that way because your particular district voted for Bernie, and they're like, that's not how it works, and they just got pissed because they lost, and they were always going to lose, but
no, they
were lost.
Very sore losers, but I think part of what they were crying foul on is that the reason that a lot of the numbers weren't hit is because a lot of people were turned away at the door because they didn't meet particular requirements. And if you think about our experience in Colorado, right, we had
the Hillary Clinton campaign didn't orchestrate that.
Well, they're charging that they did.
What, how? They went to Nevada and said, don't, like, please don't.
Please enforce the rules harder.
Please make yeah. Bernie caucus captains not know the rules
yeah,
and not
yeah.
register people
See, that,
properly.
That's the problem.
Like,
no, again, I don't know the ins
I'm
and outs.
I'm sorry that that Hillary Clinton's campaign, who she's a Democrat, by the way, for her entire life, and has a strong campaign and a strong
she had
campaign
a
staff.
Much better ground game.
That
much
they,
better
that
ground
they
game.
They went in and they knew exactly what they had to do, and they knew what they could do and who was allowed to do what, and they did the right thing, and they got their people there, and they did the right thing, and Bernie's people fell apart, and so Hillary's to blame because what? She did the right thing, and you guys fell apart and melted down and don't...
Well, we're at that phase now where it's very frustrating, where they see they're likely not going to win, and it's tough to stomach, and it's tough to take,
and they're acting like 3-year-olds.
But the whole
crazy
drumbeat of this movement has been this establishment is corrupt, you know, from Bernie himself,
right?
And that thought is percolating in everything, whether there's any logic to back it up or not.
Well, and from what I understand, like I said before, the biggest fight broke out about what the rules should be. So if you think about it in that lens, if they're saying that the establishment is corrupt and the rules are against us, and their attempt to modify the rules was stymied because they didn't modify the rules appropriately, then from their lens, it's easy to see how they could say the establishment's corrupt, we couldn't even change the rules through the proper channels to change the rules in our favor, which is like something a Republican would argue.
Yeah, it's like something, not a Republican, but a Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Trump was yelling and screaming about the Colorado not having the straw poll and not having, you know, like that whole thing. And you're like, well, that was always the way it was.
Listen, the rules don't even allow us to modify the rules any way we want. So the rules are broken.
Right. Well, no, you just don't know anything.
You just didn't know how to do it.
And now the answer from people like Sean King is to throw up their hands and say, well, I'm just done with the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
I'm going to start the Neo-Green Party something.
New party. And we're just going to split the party, and we're going to let Donald Trump be the president because Hillary's so awful.
Well, because we're just so upset with the establishment, and we couldn't get our way, and we couldn't. Mm-hmm. Which he's in the vast minority, and I'm not worried about it. I think the logic is to me, it's tantamount to a temper tantrum that you didn't.
It is, absolutely.
And, yes. and I guess that is more satisfying than saying, wow, okay, we have a lot of work to do. So what we're going to do is get on the ground floor. We're going to become PCPs. Everybody I know is going to become a PCP. And I'm going to bring all my friends to the next county meeting. And we're going to be working on these rules. And they meet like twice a month.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like twice a month you meet for a few hours, like on a Thursday night. And it sucks and it's boring. But that's how you actually make change. You don't throw one tantrum at one convention every 4 years.
Right.
Right.
And you
don't say oh, we hate the rules. We want new ones. We're not actually going to organize. Like, good luck, Bernie bros, forming a political party that does any fucking thing. I'm sorry, but if you can't even bother to learn the rules of the convention that you're actually a part of, I really seriously doubt that you're going to be able to form a new political party that has any chance of doing anything ever.
Well, and let's take the vitriol about not knowing the rules back a little bit, because even in the Colorado side, which I thought for chaos was really controlled chaos.
Compared to Nevada,
sure. Yeah. We had a situation that I had described before where we had an open seat for a county commissioner.
Yes.
And we had a nomination from the floor, which has never fucking happened before. Nobody knew what to do. And people were giving their very first opening speeches. We had five people come up. Turned out two of them could not be eligible because of residency requirements or age requirements or party affiliation requirements. In the case of the younger person, I think it was kind of a combination of the two.
And did he say this is all fixed and he picked up a chair?
It turned out that he had not lived in the county. He'd lived in the state, but he'd not lived in the county that he was running long enough.
Uh-huh.
He had just bought a property there and moved to the county. He'd been in a neighboring county and he hadn't been there for 6 months, which is a requirement.
Sure.
In the case of the 19-year-old, I believe you had to be a registered Democrat for 6 months, and she had been registered to vote
for six days.
So, right. And then when it came down to it, we had the three candidates. One of them turned out that they didn't really want it, so they just didn't show up.
Sure.
To the election, so they weren't allowed on the ballot. And then we had a Q&A debate between two people, and the person who was kind of really in the bag for to begin with ended up getting it. But this was a lot of people having to show up to a lot of meetings, understanding what the actual rules are in order to understand what's going on. And if you don't understand Robert's Rules of Order, you don't know how motions are placed. You don't know how, when is the
and
right...
This is boring, dry stuff.
It's very boring, very dry, very long.
Also,
it can also delegitimize an entire election if you don't do it correctly, which is why we had to go back...
We had to do it twice.
And do it twice to actually elect the only person who ended up on the ballot for the Democratic Party for this particular seat, because...
There was scuttlebutt that someone on the Republican side was going to call to question the idea that we did or did not have a quorum
because
of a stupid mistake that the chair just didn't say.
We have a quorum. But she
we
didn't
had a quorum,
say
but she didn't say out loud, we have a quorum. And somebody noted that and said that could be a potential violation of the rules.
But it got worked out, I guess.
And
we had to do
a whole second meeting.
And
do it again.
We had to go back to Arvada
and do the whole thing again.
And she's like, for the record, we have a quorum, and everyone cheered, and it took 10 minutes, but I had to drive for 30 minutes after work to get to Arvada to go to the thing, to stand there for 10 minutes, and then do...
kind of thing these types of people in Nevada will not tolerate.
Well, no. So to a broader point, though, you guys went ahead and did that because you'd like to see the Democratic Party pushed in a more progressive direction, and you'd like to see people like us have a hand in the rules and where the party goes in the future.
And I'd like to see a Democrat on the ballot.
Hold on. And so you decide to do things... like go to a pain in the ass meeting in Arvada because somebody forgot to say one thing and take time out of a night where you'd rather be relaxing and drinking wine and drive out to Arvada to sit and say a stupid thing. But why don't you just say it's all fixed and say I'm not going to vote and throw a chair and start a new party? I don't understand. Why are you guys doing it this way?
Why are we just doing the thing that's so established? We're so established.
Why don't you be one of the cool Twitter kids?
just yell and scream and be like, and then there's no Democrat on the ballot for the seat. Of course, the party is, the system
it's
is fixed.
It's the fault of the party.
No.
It's the fault of Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
No, it's not.
It's the fault of Hillary Clinton.
You just have to go to a thing and it sucks.
You just have to show up and
say yay and go away.
And
you go away. It's fine. It's
night. One thing I want these people in Nevada to understand is it's crooked. Yeah, the game's a little fixed, but it's the only game in town.
Well, you know what? I don't even know if I want to go far and say it's fixed because
I agree.
Because,
well, okay,
well, hold on.
Well, I maybe fixed might have gone too far, but I do want to say crooked.
People
maybe
that,
there are some messed
angry,
up rules.
That these angry Bruni people, and I'm not saying that they didn't have any point, that they didn't have any legitimacy to
their
any
grievances.
Of their anger.
Oh,
their
you can. They have grievances, and those grievances should be aired through
sure,
the proper
but,
channels.
But think about this. They are getting mad and yelling and screaming and picking up chairs and directing them at the people who, guess what, have been PCPs for years and show
yeah,
up
exactly.
to these meetings twice a month and
yep.
sit in these boring rules meetings and have done the hard legwork. And the people who are super delegates have done tons and tons of legwork and spent
right.
years and
fundraising
given the
and
time.
Absolutely.
Door knocking and phone calling and really tried to progress progressive candidates and really tried to make liberals and Democrats electable and elected in these state and local and national elections. They've been working for years. You don't get to be a superdelegate just because you show up. Superdelegates are people that have worked tirelessly for the party, that have worked...
Well, now hold on. That fair enough, but let's say you hear all that and say, I don't care. I think the superdelegate thing is BS. Then you have to get on the rules committee.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is a lot of work and a lot of time.
You don't change that by throwing a chair. You change that by getting on the rules committee.
Right.
Right. And then you don't get to be Bernie and say, oh, wait, I know I said all that stuff about superdelegates and how they're totally corrupt and it's awful. They should all vote for me.
Yeah,
instead.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's a whole other thing. I can't follow the logic
Come
in
on.
That.
You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's coming from not...
Jeff Weaver.
That's coming from Jeff Weaver.
yeah, but Bernie's endorsing
desperate
it.
Desperate to win.
Yeah,
but anyway.
I mean, he
yeah.
endorses the message.
Be that as it may, as much consternation as there is, I still see this ending up in the same way 08 did. They're going to come together.
Yeah.
It's going to be more or less a unified front. Yes, there's going to be some Pumas, and instead of 60-year-old ladies, there'll be 23-year-old guys,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever. Different flavor.
They'll say awful things to me on Twitter. And
I actually see it going down extraordinarily differently, but...
Okay, how do you see it going down?
Tell.
I see a lot of the people who are threatening to stay home will stay home.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I would say about a month ago, that there was a very clear, unified, like, I'm very happy we've got two qualified candidates, whichever... And I thought that there were a lot of people that could be brought to that message. But watching this go down, I think that might have been hyper-optimistic because
maybe, but Dana,
there are plenty of people that I think are either going to stay home. And I think that there are going to be some people, because of the caliber of people that we're talking about, who are engaging in this type of behavior, that when they say, if Bernie's not on the ballot, I'm voting for Trump, are just passive-aggressive enough to do so.
Some, sure. But remember, keep this in mind, Dana.
I think Hillary Clinton will still be the president of the United States, but I don't think we're going to see the great unification that you guys are predicting.
Well, maybe not the great unification, but in a couple weeks, this is going to be over. You're going to have California. You're going to have New Jersey.
Yep.
Yep.
Unless Bernie really does say, well, I'm 300 delegates behind, so I'm going to storm into Philadelphia and talk all these superdelegates into switching their vote for me because I poll better against Trump, which is asinine.
Oh. No, it's totally stupid. But, although we could see what happens in California. I mean, mathematically,
we're in serious problems. Okay,
but,
maybe if he squeaks out a win by a couple points there and they split those 400 delegates
right.
so effing well.
Right, I mean, we're not the Republican Party.
70-30.
Like, we're not the Republican Party. If he squeaks out an extra
1%,
it's proportional.
Yep.
So
yep.
what's he going to get? An extra
that's
17,
best.
18 get delegates.
Right,
I mean, the last
right.
couple have been ties
and he's
or
lose
basic
Jersey.
Ties.
He's
well,
gonna
it'll
lose
probably
California.
Be a tie.
Well, yeah, sure, or a tie at best.
I mean, that's what we're getting in the last. I mean, that's what we're getting is functional ties.
Right.
Someone wins two delegates. The next one, someone wins two delegates, and the next one, they get the exact same amount. So, if what
like
we're going
to
get
out,
is a number of ties moving from here on out, then
Hillary Clinton has 2.5 million more people. That voted
does
for her.
Not matter.
I
that does
I
not
take
matter.
Some, I think it
I take
matters.
Some issue with that because caucus doesn't count raw vote. Caucus states don't count raw vote, right?
Right. No, that is absolutely true. We just do
so,
well. We count
so
raw
we
vote.
So we definitely count raw vote.
I sat there and counted
yeah,
the votes,
did.
And
well,
we
yes,
did.
Yes, yes. But in that total they keep talking about, is that just from primary states or
so? Right. That's basically a false number.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, she does. I'm sure she has more votes.
But. Yeah, absolutely. But the fact of the matter is, it really doesn't matter when we really get down to how somebody becomes elected.
Okay, but it matters. What I'm saying is, it matters to me that like this entire argument about Bernie Sanders is winning and Bernie Sanders really does have the popular vote.
He's
really
having it stolen from
really
him.
People right. have stolen. No, more people have voted for her than have voted for him. Period.
Well, I haven't heard more stupid arguments about the Electoral College in. Oh my God. I guess it's been 8 years.
Yeah.
Since I've heard.
Get ready for them. But getting back to my point, Dana, in a couple weeks, one way or another, it's going to be over. Even if Bernie does ride into Philly, because that's in what, mid June?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And say, okay, superdelegates, vote for me. No. Okay. And then, uh-huh. and then that's it. And now it's 3 months of just Trump opening his mouth nonstop.
Right. Yes. Well, did you hear about this today? The DNC actually made their first capitulation offer to Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're negotiating.
And they made their first negotiation and said, we would like you to be on the DNC's policy committee,
uh-huh.
like chair of the DNC's policy committee. I don't know if they said chair specifically, but at least a spot. I would assume chair if they're going to try to tell him stop running. But they said, if you stop running, we'll give you a spot as the...
they're going to have to give him a spot anyway.
A leadership spot.
If you stop running. I think they just said, why don't you go ahead and, since you're so upset, let's have you go ahead and come on the
thing. I don't know what kind of mafioso language
yeah,
they used.
They didn't
in
say
the,
you have to stop running.
I wasn't in the room at the time. I wasn't in the room at the time, but yeah. They weren't like, awful, really nice campaign you got there. Too bad if something were to happen to it. Although I think they already said that, but...
No, that's the thing. They're ticked off at him at the same time they know they need to offer him something. Now, though, a lot of the rules seem...
Can I just back up for 1 second with the sentence that you just said, which is to your point, Dana, about all these people who are going to maybe not show up and not vote, blah, blah, blah. Okay, don't. I don't care. You weren't a part of the process before and we keep winning. If you decide that Hillary's the worst thing that could ever happen to you and you'd rather Trump be the president, then just stay home. I don't care. We didn't need you in the first place. We'd love to have you. But if you're seriously going to not vote for Hillary Clinton because you think that the situation that the system is so corrupt and there's no point, and you already thought that before Bernie Sanders and you'll think it after, and it's fine.
And I think
I'm not going to let you hold us hostage. I don't care. Don't vote.
I think that brings up a good point. I don't know that numbers-wise, with
they
the
matter.
Number of people who are going to run from Trump, it's going to really matter that much.
Yes.
I
wish someone would be like, look, Bernie bros, you're like less than 0.5%. Nobody gives a fuck about you.
Yeah.
If you don't vote or you vote for Trump, it's not going to affect this election and you don't get to hold everyone hostage.
Right.
So fucking go back to your
hole. Hold on. Nobody's been able to tell the evangelicals that for
they're
like
way
the last
bigger
like 25 years
than the Bernie bros.
And they've
they're almost exactly the same. And while these people are fucking 20 and they've been at it for a year.
All right, I refuse to do.
Evangelicals have only been at it at tops 25 years.
Okay, but I refuse to do what the Republican Party did with the evangelicals and let them hijack our party.
For the next 25
years?
No fucking way.
No, fuck
absolutely.
You, go home. Yeah. I don't care.
No,
I don't need
you.
I don't need you and I don't want you. And you can be out of my party if you want to, but I will not let you hijack my party for the next 25 years because you're a loud minority.
Yeah.
Go away.
I would take some issue with that, in that in order to do what we need to do down ballot, and at local and state levels, we do need everybody who truly is or considers himself a progressive. Because remember, a lot of these folks, especially in these open primaries and caucuses, who are voting for Bernie, are just anti-Hillary votes.
Yes.
They're not really progressives at all.
Right.
Now, some of them are, and they are upset with the direction of the party, or they're just riding this wave of everything with the Democratic establishment is too corrupt and Wall Street speeches and too much war or whatever.
Right. Well, I think the anti-Hillary vote that we're seeing in the primary will not translate to an anti-Hillary pro-Trump vote.
No.
In the general.
No.
Because, here's a great example. I was questioning whether or not I'd bring this up on the podcast because I don't know how much more I want to drive traffic to this thing, but at this point it's so viral, I think you've all seen it. There's a video that
Gangnam
I saw
style?
Months ago, Gangnam Style, in which Hillary Clinton dresses up as a... No.
Okay.
No, there's this video that I saw months ago that was trending when, like, a lot of the anti-Hillary sentiment started really picking up. But apparently in this last week, it's been on my news feed a lot that it's like, this video's gone viral. This new anti-Hillary video's gone crazy. And it's called 13 Minutes of Hillary Lying.
Mm,
and it's just this super cut of her... saying one thing, then saying the opposite.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, they're not really out of context. It is about her changing opinion, but she's also...
Like every politician
Like every politician ever. And she's...
You can see my face
the parts, the parts that really make me go like that is so unfair, uh-huh. is when they ask her about things like NAFTA when she was the first lady.
Mm-hmm.
And she's supporting her husband's policy, and then
she came out political power
25 years later and said, like, no, I actually think NAFTA was a very bad idea, and I was behind the scenes talking to people about things that needed to be changed. Things like that.
Which may or may not be true. We don't know.
Well, yeah, we don't know. But the 13 minutes of Hillary lying thing, I mean, it does include some things where you have to acknowledge, yes, she has had a colored and checkered political career for a very long period of time. She's been in politics long enough that she has been both for and against gay marriage.
Sure.
As same as Obama.
So is everybody else. So I think that that needs to be taken with a grain of salt, but where that video is driving pro-Bernie, anti-Hillary votes, that video is not going to drive anti-Hillary, pro-Trump votes. Because if we wanted to do a supercut of Trump making shit up...
Well, everybody will.
We could never stop. Like, it would just be a 39-year...
Well, that's starting.
Right.
Yeah, it would just be a 39-year video, and YouTube doesn't support that kind of life.
Can we talk for a second about that specifically? About the... we weren't going to do this, but the Washington Post article...
No.
All right.
No.
We'll talk about
we'll
this
save that
second.
For later.
There's a Washington Post article that you can look up about Bill Clinton and Donald Trump. But no, you're exactly right, right? So, like, the thing that makes me crazy about that video, and I want to remind everybody in case you forgot, because I know I've been throwing a lot of Bernie shade lately because I'm pretty angry with his supporters specifically and Jeff Weaver, is that I caucus for Bernie. But what I wanted to bring up was, like, these kind of things are not thrown at male politicians in the same way. Hillary has been in the public eye for longer and more directly in the public eye. Like, Bernie has been in government for a long time. But he's like this weird independent guy from Vermont who hasn't really gotten a lot of press. Nobody really knew who he was except the occasional impassioned speech or whatever, and like, oh, he's that independent socialist or whatever.
Hillary Clinton, that screamy, loud old guy.
Yeah, but like, even that, like, most people really didn't know who Bernie Sanders was before this. And so the level of scrutiny that she's gotten versus him, and then the level of sexism that exists within American politics, certainly, with, you know, you could make that same 13
Nobody's
minutes
gonna ever call
of somebody lying.
Bernie shrill.
No, certainly not.
Although you should.
They'll call him loud, but that's not the same.
He actually is shrill.
I don't know about shrill, but loud.
That you could make 13 minutes of enter any politician's name lying at any time. Anyone.
Well,
Obama, Bill Clinton, all the most beloved male politicians that you can
think
of. Ronald Reagan,
Jimmy Carter. Absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't matter, right? You could make that of anyone.
I mean, even LBJ and Ford
but
back to where there's recording.
But we make one of Hillary, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is shocking.
Well,
she changed her mind, and it's been 30 years, and how dare she? I mean, it's
so
ridiculous.
I think what's particularly shocking about that video, because there are times that even as a person who likes Hillary Clinton was like, you fucked up, girl. It's because I disagreed with her when she had her previous opinion. I agree with her on her current opinion on most things.
Yeah.
And I believe that that is her genuine current real opinion.
Genuinely held belief.
Yes. And she's in a political environment where she's allowed to say most of those things openly. A lot of times, thanks to Bernie.
Exactly right.
And that was his function in this election, and he's stated that that was supposed to be what it was. But, some of the times when you hear her, you know, speaking in the late 90s, early 2000s, you hear her kind of choke back a little bit of her soul when she says things like, no, I believe that marriage is between one man and one woman. She says it fervently, but you can see the deadness in her eyes. That
same with
like,
Obama.
Yeah, absolutely.
Comes out and says it now, like, I can't believe I had to do this crap and it sucks. But now, again, this is the argument, and it's a tough argument to have with people who have strong beliefs of any variety of incrementalism and pragmatism versus
revolution,
the passion of your cause.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because the reality is that Hillary, there's a very good chance, now we don't know this for sure, but there's a real good chance in 2008 had Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama said, "Oh yeah, we're for same-sex marriage," we would have had President Romney. Now that's just the reality of the situation.
That's exactly right.
I really don't think so.
And you might be right. But
I don't think there's a single Barack Obama supporter that was like, I'm not sure about this first black president. But
hey, Prop 8 passed that year.
Nope. Yeah, but how? Okay, so can you? I would love to see a graph, like a Venn diagram, of the number of people that voted for Prop 8 and the number of people that voted for Barack Obama.
Well, Barack Obama won California, and Prop 8 passed in California.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Venn diagram between two things.
Well, something along that line is similar.
I do think that's a little naive. Barack Obama won plenty of Midwestern semi-conservative housewives who were just mad at the economy or mad at the Iraq war or whatever.
Well, and there were definitely a lot of people that were anti-McCain.
Well,
in a way.
Right, McCain. I said Romney. My mistake. But yeah, anyway, yeah. Well, Romney was running too. My point is this. The climate was not ready yet. It was still a wedge issue. It was still a big deal.
Sure.
It was people
not like 2004, but definitely was still not like it is now.
Right.
Yes.
And it was it's a dangerous calculus to say that. And you know what? I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I understand. And look where it's gotten us now.
Yeah.
Well, and the interesting thing about
where we are now.
To Dan Savage's point, he talks about this specifically in Washington State, that some section of the LGBT community was really, really, really pissed off when Washington State passed civil unions.
Right.
Because they were like, not far enough, still at the back of the bus, blah, blah, blah. But what he says, and I believe him, and maybe he's a Hillary supporter, I know his husband is, I think he won't come out because he's like, I'll support the Democrat. But he talks about incrementalism and marriage equality. He talks about how, you know, when you pass civil unions and it's the first step and it's a slippery slope and the world doesn't fucking end, then people go, oh, yeah, I guess I don't care. And then incrementally, they got gay marriage first. I mean, they were like one of the first states in the country to get
legal
gay marriage because they went, okay, we're going to do civil unions and then we're going to do this and incrementally, and people just got used to it and were like, oh, the world didn't end.
These arguments aren't new to LGBT. You had a lot of the same arguments in the civil rights movement.
Yes. Well,
a lot of people opposed King and said it's not enough. It needs to be more. Faster.
Absolutely.
Now.
Black Panther movement. Absolutely. Malcolm X. A lot of more radical movements said this is not enough. We can't just capitulate to the white folks and we have to have a revolution.
And you can understand where they're coming from.
I mean, absolutely. I get it. Like, it's totally bullshit and it's totally awful and your life is being directly affected. But And I'm not going to say that we're there yet on civil rights. Like, we are still making incremental change.
That's why
Black Lives Matter and all the things. Like,
of course.
We're at least at a place now, as opposed to the 60s, where we can have, you know, protests in the streets about Black Lives Matter and talk about specific issues around civil rights, about, you know, criminal justice and cops and all the things. Whereas in the 60s, we were talking about basic, like, desegregation and like, can I marry a black dude or can I marry a white lady? Like, you know what I mean? So incrementalism has worked in the civil rights movement. It's also still incremental.
So I
understand both points on that.
Sure.
Can I bring up something I think is really important?
Yeah.
It's just why I think a lot of these people who, you know, we've been labeling Bernie Bros, but just people who are revolutionists in general, I think the reason that they are so against the idea of any sort of incrementalism, despite how rational it sounds, is because the biggest civil rights movement that we've seen in the last 15, 20 years has been the gay rights movement, and it has moved so fast.
Yes.
In comparison to every other movement. And this is in relation to another thing we had on our list of things to talk about. So if we were to say, in order of the civil rights movements of the 20th century, we would say the women's rights movement, the black rights movement, and the gay rights movement. Uh-huh. And we are sitting here today talking fervently about some very minute details of the gay rights movement, talking about how this thing needs to move faster and like, this should be over.
Yes.
Because it's been moving fast and we're getting milestones hit over and over.
Yeah.
Now, just today, it was ruled that it is now legal for female pilots who flew in World War II to be buried in Arlington, Virginia.
Yeah, I wanted you to tell the story.
Because there were a significant number of, they called them WASPs, or Women Air Specialist Pilot Airmen, I want to say. Or I might have gotten that acronym wrong, but you get the idea.
Yeah. This is World War II?
During World War II.
Okay.
And they were not allowed to be technically considered to be in the military until 1970.
Jesus.
And 38 of them died during World War II, and they had to be buried outside of military
because they considered
grounds.
Them like civilians.
They considered them civilians because women can't serve in the military. In 1970s, in the 70s sometime, they made a federal law that said women can serve in the military, quote, but the Army specifically...
Runs Arlington
and said, well, they're in the military, but they're not in the Army.
So you can't
and
be
And so
in
they
our...
can't be in the Army. And so you can't be buried in Arlington.
And so in 2016...
And so in 2016, we finally decided... that women who flew in World War II can be buried in Arlington. So when we talk about the speed at which we expect our civil rights movements to work, we're talking about people who are used to the gay movement that has moved so fast.
Right, and a lot of these kids, too, like a lot of these Bernie Bros and a lot of these people that are Bernie supporters that are young, they grew up during the civil rights movement for the LGBT community, and from the time that they were aware to now, it's changed.
Yes.
It's over.
And where we're talking about for women, we're talking about from the beginning of time until 2016.
We're still not
it's
there.
It's still all fucked up.
Yes.
And so I think their expectations on change...
are a little unrealistic.
Especially when we talk about, you know, men in their 20s.
Yeah.
We're expecting to see radical change happen at a different rate than, say, like the suffragettes or somebody who had a mother that was a fucking army pilot in World War II.
Yeah.
And
they're just
they're
now being
still now
be
just being allowed to be buried with the rest
Arlington.
Of the soldiers.
Oh my God!
So
can I say something else about that though? That I think is critical to talking about the difference between the LGBT equal rights movement and the other two.
Yes,
is that for women and for people of color? Walking around in the world, it's immediately known that you're a woman or a person
of
color.
You can't be a closeted woman or a
closeted...
You
can't be a closeted woman or a closeted person of color. No. Unless you're doing that awful... What is that movie? Soul something?
Soul Man?
Yeah, with the black
that
face.
That Pierre and I did the commentary for.
Oh, my
for.
God. Anyway, we won't get into that. But you can't walk around as a closeted person of color or a closeted woman. And so I think that the gay thing kind of broke open because everybody... thought gays were like these crazy perverts in parks doing strange things in plaid shirts behind closed doors. And then they were like, oh, my brother's gay. Oh, my God, that
my
guy
boss.
I've worked with for 30 years is gay. Oh, my God, my neighbor's gay.
My priest.
My best friend's son is gay. My priest is... Where is... why didn't
there's probably
even
a
know?
Couple bi people
and
in
I,
there somewhere.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. Don't even get me started. I will get on this later, but with the bi erasure thing this week. But no, really, though, like, people just realize sort of, like, all these people... It's not like, oh, my God, all these people that I loved were black. Or all these people... I had no idea. All these
I had no
I
idea that my best bros were women.
Were women. Why are they being treated badly? Like, we're just socialized in a different way, where when you're gay and you're closeted, or you maybe not even closeted, but some idiot doesn't realize... that you grow to, you know, be fond of this person, respect them professionally, whatever.
Realize and then, they're just another person.
And then you go, oh my God, they can't get married? That's crazy. Whereas with women and people of color, it's much more of a cultural and a socialization thing where, you know, you see it and you recognize it and it's something that you've been socialized to see as different and see as foreign and see as other. And so it's really a different challenge, I think, which is why... the whole point of me talking about this is that I think that's why the LGBT movement moved so much faster, was once people came out and once, you know, that started to happen and people realized, then it moved fast because it was like, oh, God, give them all rights, Jesus, already. Like, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Whereas women, it's much more of like an ingrained, women, people of color, I think it's much more of like an ingrained cultural bias and a socialization.
I mean, if we're going to really talk about the Bible and what it has to say about who's bad.
Well, women and black people, right?
Women and black
I
people.
I mean, Jesus
rank,
Christ.
There's one page about gays. There's
like one
like
sentence.
The entire
one
book.
Line
the
in Leviticus.
Entire
there's an entire
Bible
book about women.
It's about women and a little bit about... people of color.
Yeah, no, what I was going to say...
it's all bad. But go ahead.
About the gay invisibility prior to the start of the civil rights movement, too. Prior to 1970, there wasn't even, like, a a cultural marker for it. People tried so hard to hide the fact that they were gay because it was so difficult. That,
it was also criminalized.
Criminalized.
They would bust gay bars,
which is
why,
and so was being women for a significant period of time.
Stonewall, the whole point of that was that the gay bars were literally like criminal enterprises.
They chemically castrated Alan Turing, and then he committed suicide because we had to do that because one of the most brilliant people will ever live that had to be gay.
And what I was trying to, and I totally agree with that, but what I was trying to say is that, like, it wasn't even just that it's not immediately visibly noticeable the way that, gender or race might be, but that there were specific attempts by people of the gay community to have things like beards and fake families.
Yeah, completely.
And try to be appear as not gay as humanly possible. Which you can't really try to appear as not black as possible without going full white chick, which is a movie that should never have been made.
I'm not even talking about that. But yeah, right? Like, yeah, exactly. So, you're right.
So
it wasn't even really in the cultural consciousness until Stonewall.
Right.
And Puerto Rican and other people of color who were drag queens in a gay bar had a particularly bad night because Judy Garland died and some cops came in and tried to bust up the bar and they were like, not tonight.
I'd be like, and if, there was a riot. A couple of weeks ago when Prince died, if somebody told me I couldn't wear purple the next day and the cops came.
No, the cops came in while you were wearing purple and said, like, you're not allowed to be you. And you've had centuries of oppression. Like,
I'm glad you guys bring that up. That is a dark chapter in modern history. And doesn't go too far back. This was still going on in the 80s, I think.
Stonewall was in 68.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was the complete erasure of...
Well, I know it happened in the Castro in the 70s in San Francisco.
But of the HIV and AIDS epidemic during the Reagan administration, which murdered an entire generation of gay men.
Not to mention what happened with the fuck-ups with AIDS, just as far as us not understanding what it was as a disease. I mean, we basically killed 80% of the hemophiliacs in this country because we had no idea that it was a bloodborne pathogen. Mm-hmm. So we gave every hemophiliac blood from pooled sources that had, you know, up to 800 people in a pool.
Yeah.
And we would
give them a pool of blood.
Just a pool of blood. And, you know, at that time in the 80s.
What is the documentary called that addresses that?
It's called Bad Blood.
Bad Blood. That's on Netflix.
I highly recommend it.
We're not talking about centuries ago. We're talking about
20-30 years.
In our lifetimes.
I was born in 1983. The hemophiliac thing that I was just talking about wasn't done until 1985. So this happened in my lifetime.
But the LGBT, not in my consciousness, but in my lifetime. The death of a generation of gay men
happened in our lifetime.
In my lifetime.
Yeah.
Like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So it has been fast. It has been quick and swift, and I'm glad. And it's been...
And frankly, like, considering that the gays were demonized, and then there was a epidemic, and the recovery from that epidemic did not include any further demonization as much as it could have done, I'm actually almost proud of humanity that we didn't go full eradication on people, just because, you know, once it was identified as, quote, the gay plague.
Mm-hmm. Gay cancer.
Yeah, the gay cancer, the gay plague. It's really a huge shout out to the people that did a lot of that initial research.
Absolutely. Well, relating it to current matters, you know, I don't think the anti-gay marriage push has gone away. And I think you're going to see a lot, because we're not even focusing on all the Todd Akins out there.
Yeah.
Right.
And the... Murdochs and mm-hmm. those crazy, and they're mm-hmm. out there, right. And you know, who's Trump gonna pander to? Well, he panders to whoever's got a mic in his face these days.
But, he can't really say much about anti-gay at this point, even during this election cycle.
He will.
Even during this cycle, he said he has nothing wrong with, he has nothing against gay
people.
We'll
see when his feet get pressed to the fire a little more by a lot of the hard right and some of the southern states he's going to try to win, because North Carolina is going to be close and Georgia could even be close, and, you know, Virginia, he's going to have a fight on his hands. And I think a lot of the more Ted Cruz conservatives right now, they're gung-ho for Trump because they hate Hillary, but you know, he's going to get asked some of these questions.
I think he's going to have to be truthful to his record on some of these things. Like,
I think
he can make a lot of shit up, but I don't think that Donald Trump hates gay people is something he can Etch-A-Sketch. I don't. He has gone on, like, there are too many. That would be like if it came out that Mike Huckabee, well, that wouldn't be too surprising.
He's gone on record saying Hillary Clinton is awesomely qualified, and she's great.
She was at his wedding.
And Bill Clinton is amazing.
He gave her donations.
Yeah.
And there should be gun control. And then literally today, he was kissing
at the
NRA.
Well, that was actually on my list, kissing NRA ass.
Well, let's go ahead
reasons.
And get to that then, because we're almost out of time.
Okay. So he was kissing NRA ass all over the place, but he specifically was not really talking about his positions. He was trying to smear potential made-up Hillary positions, which were that she specifically wants to abolish the Second Amendment, and she wants to let criminals out of jail that are there for gun crimes.
Wait, that doesn't make any sense.
Well,
that doesn't make any sense.
How is that the same... What?
Because aren't they trying to pass legislation to make sure that convicted domestic violence felons can still get their guns?
Correct.
It doesn't make any sense.
Because he doesn't have sincerely held fucking beliefs.
But that's just my point, Dana. He could Etch-A-Sketch anything. Because literally he wrote a book where he says there should be more gun control and there doesn't need to be assault weapons and there should be longer waiting periods.
I understand that it might seem disingenuous to maybe someone who's not on our side to say, like, Hillary Clinton is allowed to have 30 years of political history and she's allowed to change her mind and Trump isn't, but...
Well, he gets away with it because he wasn't a politician.
And he doesn't have to defend any of his previous statements, but when it comes to something like... he's really good friends with RuPaul. Like, how do you say...
Not anymore.
Well, okay, maybe not for the last 8 months, or maybe they only just fucking Snapchat, but...
See, and that's going to hurt him in places like Virginia.
How do you not...
Okay, but so the thing that we have to remember about Donald Trump is that we are and continue to be and will always be wrong because we can't possibly wrap our brains around Donald Trump because what is happening? I mean, when he was talking about the gun thing, which is supposed to be like this big news story today, right? But he's not like, I'm pro-gun. He's like... My sons own so many guns. I was even like...
Did he say that they own the best guns?
No, they
just said they own tons
of guns. He's like, I was even like, that's a lot of guns.
Okay, so close enough.
He's like, basically like, if I'm saying it's a lot of guns... But he didn't say I own any guns. He just was like, my sons love guns. They're the best at guns. They love guns
everybody
the most.
Should have a gun.
Everybody,
guns are great.
They're like, my sons' guns are great. They have a lot of guns, though. Like, it's a lot. I even told them it's a lot. And I'm like, Donald Trump, oh my God.
Well, he's never on script. It's always winging it, which is interesting and weird and refreshing. But when he gets into a real policy debate with Hillary Clinton.
Oh my God.
It's going to be beautiful.
I'm still not convinced it's going to happen.
No, I'm
absolutely still waiting for the moment. And I will say this every time you invite me on the podcast. I'm still waiting for the curtain moment. Where he goes, surprise, bitches, you just voted for the least qualified person you ever possibly could, and we just proved to you that people shouldn't
the
be allowed
Republican
to vote.
The Republican Party is bullshit.
That it's all performance art?
Because he's really trying to get Clinton elected. Which is a conspiracy theory on the right, that, like, he talked to Bill Clinton and then...
Well, not anymore. Everybody's falling in line,
this is,
like, Greg Dworkin talked for days and days about the Great Republican Civil War, and I said, no, it's not going to happen, buddy.
I know.
It's not. We love you, Greg.
So there was, before we're done, there was a little bit of a small Republican civil war, which was Marco Rubio, who's on his way out.
Oh, yeah, quickly. We got about
yeah,
2 minutes.
Okay. Just so everyone's aware, Marco Rubio, who is on his way out, there was a vote on the floor this week about whether or not to fund, it was supposed to be $1.8 billion for the Zika virus, which is... really, really tearing through Puerto Rico, starting to show up in Florida a little bit, which is where Rubio's home turf is. Mm-hmm. And so he's got to be very impassioned about this. But the amendments or the suggestions as they came through the floor were to eventually end up making it about $600 million worth of funding.
Right, they want to fund about a third of it.
Which is about a third. And Marco Rubio got on the floor and unleashed He lost his fucking mind. He melted down.
Yeah, he did his job as a senator.
And he was screaming about how, like...
Now's not the time to be cheap and to grandstand and oppose Obama.
He said, like, the entire time I've been here, you've been obstructionist just because something's proposed by Obama. This is not proposed by Obama. This is proposed by scientists.
Now we care about science. Great.
This is proposed by scientists and doctors and the people who are boots on the ground. I believe he checked Doctors Without Borders and said...
Oh, we love that.
Like, these are the people who we need to be listening to. Now, the fact that the Obama White House greenlit this and said they would automatically sign it doesn't mean that it's coming from the White House. But the fact that you're going against it goes against any rational thought and just means that you're just trying to oppose it because Obama put his thumbprint on it.
Is he like a Democrat all of a sudden?
No, he just lost it.
Like, I love science and Doctors Without Borders and Obama?
No, he actually showed he's a human being and he actually
He really burned it down. He was like, you guys are really going to be super pissed when you underfund this and 6 months later during our summer session when we're not supposed to even be here. You're going to be called back in because we're going to be dealing with an epidemic. And it's going to be dealing with your state and your state and your state and your state. And the United States is going to be ravaged by this. And we're going to all of a sudden have to do emergency funding three times what they're asking for now for preventative measures.
So you guys are being idiots. Kudos to Marco Rubio.
All of a sudden, I kind of had just the smallest modicum of respect for the dude.
Yeah, he still denies climate change, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's going to wrap it up. We will be back with all kinds of more stuff. Real quick, closing thoughts, Rach, you want to say something?
Oh, I just want to say thanks to everybody out there listening, and we'll be back soon. And if you have any love letters or hate mail, send it to irreverenttestimony@gmail.com or hit us up at Twitter at @irreverentduo.
Thank you, Netroots Radio. I'm
Thank
Travis.
Thank you, Netroots Radio. I'm Rachel.
Viva McAfee. I'm Dana.
Have a great night. Bye-bye.
I took the same